Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Craig Ruffalo. I'm Vice President here at McKinney Flavelle. And today is September 6th. It's a Friday. And welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast. Mike is out of town. He's decided that camping is more important than being here in the office when it's a bright and sunny day. So, you know, Mike, if you're listening to this podcast, we miss you, pal. You should be here and sitting down and having a great time with our guest today, Nicole Thomas, Vice President of McKinney Flavelle. How are you, Nicole?
You know, you're supposed to tell him to never let the two of us get on a podcast together.
I know. See, now this might be the most downloaded podcast in the history of McKinney Flavelle.
And it'll have nothing to do with commodity markets.
Absolutely not.
We're just entertaining together. That's
absolutely
it.
Because frankly, I just saw yesterday that our fair receiver for the Oakland Raiders could actually be released today because he got in a fight with the general manager yesterday, Mike Mayock. Surprise, surprise, AB could be out the door before he ever hits the field with the Oakland Raiders.
Well, you know, I mean, as a Steelers fan, I don't know why you did it to begin with, but whatever works for you, works for Chucky over there. Chucky's getting a horror squad. That's what he's going to end up with.
I mean, he decided on Vontaze Perfect too as a linebacker. The guy that put AB out in the playoff game a few years ago.
Beautiful combination.
Right? So that made a whole lot of sense.
Talk about team building. That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Can you imagine? Well, you know, the great Mike Coughlin always knows how to segue. So talking about beautiful combinations, how about the livestock industry and how it's going to impact all of these commodities that we're watching and how farmers are looking at. I understand that you've kind of been doing some research on the old livestock and
just a little bit, you know, it isn't a topic that's important. It's a topic we don't typically cover.
I know,
you know, we spend a lot of time on the grains and of course sugar and stuff like cocoa, and you guys are in for some good treats in the next few weeks with the podcast. So I'll be your dry entryway to that. But yeah, I thought today we talk a little bit about what's going on in those livestock markets as it relates.
When you're talking about bacon, Nicole, with the what bacon?
Oh, bacon!
I am all over this. This is awesome. So I'm ready. I'm all ears. I'm excited to know what's going on in the hog market because I need my bacon.
Well, fortunately for you, in the U.S. market, there won't be a shortage of bacon.
Oh,
isn't that great?
Oh, I am so happy to hear that.
Yes.
I can't tell you, on my Impossible Burger, I am putting bacon on it. I think that's perfect.
It's a perfect blend of vegetables and meat. That's the objective, right?
A balanced diet.
A very balanced diet. So, anywho.
Yeah, right?
Let's talk about those hog numbers.
Yeah, piggy.
You know, U.S. hog inventories were about 75 million head on June 1st, and that was up 4% from 2018. The breeding inventory is up about 1% from a year ago, and the pig crop was up 4% versus a year ago. So obviously, definitely seeing some growth and have been seeing some growth in that livestock segment.
Okay.
And of course, corn, soybean meal, DDGs make up a large percentage of that feed ration, depending on the stage of growth for that hog. And that's why it's relevant to us. The question everybody's trying to figure out is whether or not there's an export opportunity, particularly for China.
With the African swine flu still being crazy abundant over there, huh?
Yes, apparently. You know, the numbers keep getting worse, at least what people are throwing out there, anywhere from 40 to 50% decline in the inventory. So we're talking, you know, potentially losing half of that that hog population. And as we've talked about in the past, it's spreading. So you're seeing it show up in other parts of Southeast Asia. You're seeing it show up in Eastern Europe now.
Oh, geez.
And fortunately, knock on wood, so far in the U.S., we've been spared of it. And it has helped with some export demand out of the U.S., even with the trade tariffs in place.
That's
as a matter
amazing.
Of fact, we've seen the exports of pork to China for the first half of 2019. We're at about 61,000 metric tons. That's almost double or roughly double what we did the year prior. But think about it. This is why U.S. Farmers, hog producers, we love to see a resolution in this trade war. That only represents about 7% of China's total imports.
Oh my God. You're kidding me. That's so less than 10%.
Less than 10%. The majority of those imports, as we've seen with other products like soy, are coming from Brazil. Imagine that.
Come on. Imagine that.
Brazil and the EU being two large recipients of that import demand. So from our standpoint, obviously, we would like to be a bigger participant in that market. Another thing that people may not necessarily be thinking about, and it was something that was brought up by one of our associates in another report, talking about Hurricane Dorian. And you don't typically think about hurricanes and hogs, you know, naturally.
No,
you're thinking
only when pigs fly. Sorry, I just had to throw that in.
That was perfect. You're usually talking about sugar and OJ, but in this case, if you were to think back to Hurricane Florence, they did see some inventory losses. They were very minor in the grand scheme of things. But the bigger issue was they had some flooding of the waste ponds that caused some other issues. So it's just a side note of something to think about when you're thinking about the hog segment, particularly in the Carolinas, and in this case, North Carolina. Again, not something that I'm expecting to be, you know, majorly impactful to the market, but just one of those things that comes up when you're talking about hogs.
So right now we've got a pretty healthy hog industry, which would lead into some of the commentary about the feed components you mentioned. And then there are other industry participants within the feed sector as well in the livestock arena. And that would be like poultry, like layers and broilers. What's going on in that market?
So the poultry numbers are a little different. They appear to be plateauing a little bit. And we're seeing that with weights too, with the lower weights. So the August number for layers, which is the portion of the inventory responsible for laying eggs, is about flat with last year and last month. The broilers, which is the portion of inventory ultimately destined for processing, is up just slightly from July, about 2%, and near flat with year ago levels. Now we have seen on the export front, a little bit of growth year over year. So for perspective, for the first 6 months of 2019, broiler exports are up a little over 1% year on year. Shelled egg exports are up nearly 12% for that same time frame, coming off a smaller number, of course. But all in all, inventories are still projected to grow, at least at this point. And that's not far-fetched considering soy meal prices are likely to remain pretty weak this year. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But poultry, about flat.
We need to do the Chick-fil-A thing with, now that college football's back in, we're going to have that eat more chicken sign coming up there with those cows. And Popeyes, I hear, is kicking butt over Chick-fil-A in their new sandwich, right?
I wasn't going to bring it up, but that battle continues.
Right? So that could help.
Viral marketing.
I know, right?
Amazing.
So maybe that could help some of the broiler demand.
It may. Exactly. You never know.
So we'll keep our eye out for that. I'm all about the college football starting up here. We got big games this weekend. So we've got flat on layers, or, you know, mediocre potential growth in broilers going forward. So that means poultry is overall somewhat flat. We've got a third component of the livestock industry that I know that you want to talk about and hit on, and that's the beef cattle industry. What's going on with the head? Are we growing the herds, or are we actually starting to cull them?
Well, we're flattening there too, and potentially coming down. If you look at the numbers as of August 1st, there were an estimated 11.11 million head of cattle on feed, and that's nearly flat with last year. The dairy herds have been experiencing retrenchment for a while, with the herd size of 9.31 million head in July, and that's down 1% from 2018. And beef and veal exports have come down a bit as well, down about 3% for the first 6 months of this year.
Wow.
So though the numbers right now are still positive, it may be foreshadowing weakening feed demand, at least for that sector. And that'll certainly be something to watch as it relates to corn and DDG demand in particular for feed down the road.
So is the DDG, and you've mentioned that a couple times now, the distillered grains, is what's the main industry user within the livestock groupings that would buy or utilize DDG?
Well, you see a little bit of it across the board. Okay. Probably where you've seen some of the greatest inclusion has been in the hog segment.
Okay.
If we go back to, I don't know, what was that, 5-6 years ago, we were hanging out at a hog farm.
Yes, we were.
Because that's what people in this industry do for fun. I remember us noting that was a significant percentage of the feed ration.
I remember that as well.
For some of the finishing there. So that would be one major arena you would see usage.
Okay.
So it's certainly something with any of these livestock markets and pretty much with any feed, they're all pretty closely related. So, and it all starts with growth in production of the livestock themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you're looking at the components of feed, there's multiple different products. So you've mentioned soybean meal. We've mentioned DDG now. And a third one would be a
corn.
Yeah. So why would you, or what would determine you as a producer to look at one versus the other? Are there, other than maybe, like you said, a starter versus a finishing feed,
right,
are there other factors that might influence a decision on a producer?
Well, it's like every other decision in life, Craig.
Uh-oh.
What is the foundation of every decision? Well, almost every decision in life.
I feel like you're going to say cost.
Cost.
I win. Yes. What do I win?
Yes. Cost is what determines whether or not you stick with cable or you get Netflix.
Oh, God.
It's all about the cost. Well, that's part of the story, I should say. Okay. That. There's with every feed component, elements of that feed that lend itself to the development of the underlying livestock. So
okay.
If you're looking for carbs, if you're looking for protein,
got it.
And then, you know, as you mentioned with the various stages, you're going to change up that mix a little bit based off of what you're trying to get from a nutritional standpoint. But there's always a little flexibility, a little bit of leeway there, give and take, that where the cost piece comes into play. So as any agricultural producer of any product, you're always running the numbers to see, okay, how can I get the best yield at the best cost?
All right. So if I'm kind of summarizing what we've talked about here is that it sounds like the livestock industry, the hog industry, has the potential for growth, specifically maybe in products being shipped for export to China and Southeast Asia as they continue to experience the African swine flu epidemic. As the others are portraying, it's more plateauing to flat, maybe a slight retrenchment in certain segments of the beef cattle industry, particularly when you look at dairy. So how is that, in your mind, going to impact the S&D balance for, say, corn and or soy?
Well, I think all in all, the growth on the hog side and the potential offset of maybe a little less demand from some of these other segments is going to leave you about net even. I'm not anticipating significant amount of growth for demand for any of these products outside of sort of where USDA has demand pegged for a lot of this stuff. So be it soybean meal or corn, looking at best for some subtle, very subtle growth year on year. And I think we'll have a better handle on that as the months progress and we firm up these 18-19 numbers. But for now, I would say kind of looking at where these numbers stand on the balance sheet, they're not, you know, too far out of the ballpark, give or take 50 million bushels or so.
Okay.
Depending on how things pan out longer term. Obviously, price of corn has an influence on that. The price of soybean meal has an influence on that. And then obviously the prices of these co-product markets, feed components, I should say.
Absolutely. I think what the audience should take away for sure is that if you're looking at the S&Ds for grains, don't ever discount the inclusion of these different livestock markets as a prime component of price direction for these particular commodities and how it's going to impact the cash values for corn and beans going forward for sure. And the export markets are critical. I think, Nicole, you hit upon extremely well, and I thank you for that. I think we'll wrap it up right there and allow people to digest all of that. No pun intended.
I like that. See, you didn't even realize you had a joke in there. That was perfect. It was completely accidental, but it was perfect.
It did. I tripped right into that one. So I'll let everybody digest onto that. And I want to remind everybody that coming up on September 19th, we're going to have our cocoa webinar with our guest speaker, Jeffrey Rosinski. Please, if you've gotten the invite, register. If you haven't got an invite, call us. We'll get you registered for it. And, you know, Nicole, kind of last segue into all of this, talking about the livestock industry, you can't be remiss but to suggest if people are really interested to dive into our depth and knowledge of the corn wet milling industry, and of course they do, the byproducts are going to have gluten meal, feed, and oil. Check out our study that we've posted online on the U.S. corn wet milling industry. It's got a very in-depth knowledge of what's going on in that market.
Yes.
Until then, as Mike says, Nicole, live
with an attitude of gratitude.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend.
See ya.
Talk to you soon.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.